Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Maria DeMars, yelling at everybody for breaking stuff in my office today.
Maybe if you had less junk in your office.
And we have an amazing guest who we've known for almost forever, Father Michael Gutierrez, currently of St. John the Baptist Church out in Baldwin Park. So I will limit my amount of swearing on this episode.
Yeah, believe it or not, she really does try and limit her amount of swearing when you're around. So that gives you an idea of what it's like normally.
Hello, everybody.
So we'll just dive right in and get some dirt on people from you. So not the kind that people tell you in confessional, but we, for those listening who don't know, we have known Father Mike for half of forever. He married Maria, right?
Yeah, he married me. He also did my confirmation. He did Julia's first communion. He baptized two of my children. He baptized Julia. I was Julia's godmother. What did he do? Rhonda's confirmation. Julia's confirmation. Yeah, he let us do a lot of piecemeal confirmations. Like, can we take these classes here and put these classes here and put these classes here and finally get confirmed? So that was part of it.
Yeah, I think Rhonda was probably the only one that said, gee, Father Mike, I'm really sorry I can't go to the retreat, but I have to go to the Olympic trials. Can I still get confirmed? And then there was the other time when Sylvester Stallone called the house and said, oh, can Julie just get confirmed in France because Rhonda has to be at the Cannes Film Festival? And I said, no, she can't get confirmed by some random bishop in France. And then we called him and begged you if she and Rhonda could come out to St. John the Baptist so she could get confirmed.
Yes. I got used to say yes to all of you.
But hey, we're good Catholic.
This is true.
All right, confess, were Rhonda and Jennifer the absolute worst altar servers you ever had?
Right. Well, and I think we need to set this up for him first because it's probably burned into his mind. But Rhonda and Jennifer, I would say, are the worst, and I have not been to quite Mass quite as many times as Father Mike, but two of the worst altar servers in the history of Catholicism. And by this, I mean they would sit, you know, facing the front row, and they would try to either make each other laugh. They would do that thing where you punch the other person really as hard as you can in the leg, which I just did on Amaria right now to demonstrate. They would poke each other. They would be not paying at all attention. Yeah, so where do they rank? Do you have a list, and how high up are they?
Well, if I think of all the altar servers I've worked with for 24 years, they would be up there. But, you know, there was a couple of others that beat them, actually. There were some kids in the inner city that I think that could give them a run for their money. So, but the girls were fun, and I always loved Rhonda's hair.
Oh, that reminds me. See, Maria didn't remember this. There was this time when I'm out of town, because I'm always out of town, right, with my job. And I call home, and one of the older sisters rats her out and says, hey, Mom, did you tell Rhonda she could dye her hair green and blue and purple? I said, hell no. She's going to the Pan American Championship. She can't dye her hair. And they said, oh, you said she could. And the paper they send you, you're going to represent the United States of America. Please dress appropriately. And please wear nice clothes and all this, because remember, you're representing your country. And Rhonda says to me, well, it didn't say you can't dye your hair multiple colors. It's because you're not supposed to be so stupid that you do that right before you're going to be standing on the podium in front of the entire world. And so she says to me, well, I was altar serving, and Father Mike said, it looked nice. Defend yourself, sir.
It does look nice. You know, thing is, though, I have a server now that changes her hair color 5 times a year, so it's just part of the parcel of servers, you know. I remember in the 90s, my first kids had earrings. When earrings were like fashionable, became fashionable, and I was like, okay. And they were like, parents would go, how come you let them wear earrings? I go, because I'm not their parent. That's the parent department. I'm just the priest department.
Isn't that bad, though? I mean, I grew up thinking the priest is not supposed to be cooler than you, and obviously that is the case. I told her at that point, I said, well, you know what? Father Mike has to love you because he's a priest and it's his job. And do you know that if you wash your hair 20 times, that dye comes out? Because by the time I got back from North Dakota, she had blonde hair again.
Yeah, it does happen. But the other thing that also happens is like my nephew found out after many years, you just go bald.
Hear that, Rhonda? Should have listened to me.
One of the things, too, I think people, they go to Mass and they see the priest up there and they have this conception of what a priest is like or personality-wise, but you're, like, also the kind of priest that, like, goes out to a bar and has a beer with someone or something. When you meet people, especially, obviously, right now you're wearing the collar, so they probably guess you're a priest, but I don't feel like when you're maybe running a marathon or something, people are like, oh, there's a priest right there, or you're at a bar and they say, what do you do? And you say, I'm a priest. Like, I feel like if I was at a bar and just some random person who seemed cool, you know, and a whole bunch of people were talking, and I said, oh, what do you do? And we said, I'm a priest. Oh, well, I'm a nun. But, you know, as sarcasm. But what's it like when you tell people that?
It's kind of a shock to them because most people think I'm just a normal guy when they talk to me because I don't talk like a priest. I kind of talk normal, everyday life. You know, I remember the first times I went to a, I'll go back to another story. When I was on the papal visit last year in Philadelphia, 2 years ago, I was in a bar, actually, on Sunday. I had just come out of Washington, D.C., in a conference in Philadelphia, everything tied around the Pope. So on Sunday, I was actually free, and I didn't want to go sit on a bridge for 6 hours waiting for the Pope to say Mass. I said Mass the night before, so I was like, okay, it's Sunday. I'm just going to go out and be a tourist. So I put on shorts and T-shirt, got to Philly. I was thinking about going to, okay, maybe I'll go see how it looks, that line and everything. It was a big line. So I said, okay, Pope, Eagles are playing at the same time. So I said, Eagles won. So I went to a pub, had brunch. I was talking to some people, and they asked me what I did. And I said, well, priest. They go, how come you're not with the Pope? I go, the Eagle game looked a little more interesting right now. So I go on and keep moving along, and I end up at the Ritz-Carlton at the beginning of Mass, and you know, Mass is outside. They got all these jumbotrons around the cathedral. And I'm like, okay, Mass. I look to my left as a Ritz-Carlton. Ritz-Carlton won. And there was a game on. Actually, I think it was a Raider game, actually. There was a Raider game on, so I was like, even better. So I'm sitting in the bar, and I'm listening to these people kind of commentary. And they're like, what do you think? Well, I'm used to this. Why? I'm a priest. And they're like, how come you're not at the Mass? Because there was too many lines. So people start talking to me, and they realize it's kind of like, I'm more very calm about it, and I just take it all in stride.
Of course, for the record, this was, you know, you'd already been, I know because you were sending us pictures of you, like, 6 feet from the Pope and Obama. So you'd already seen the Pope a bit at this point.
Right. That's true.
I was hoping your story was going to start with, I was in the bar with the Pope, because that would be, like, the best story of all time.
No, actually, I was in a bar with a bishop in Philadelphia, which is at the end of the whole day. I was in this bar packed trying to get a train back to Jersey, and I was in this bar and I walked in, there's a bishop in there. I'm like, what is a bishop doing in the bar? So they're all like, hey, that guy's a bishop from Brazil. I go, oh, okay. So like, what do you do? I'm a priest. You don't look like a priest. What do you mean? Well, you have shorts and t-shirt. How can you be a priest? I've had to pull out my business card and show them. They're like, oh my God, you're a priest. We got a priest and a bishop in the bar. I go, I think you have a couple other priests in this bar. They're like, oh my God. I go, only in Philly.
So do you get together and speak Latin?
No.
Very disappointed.
I'm sorry.
So does everyone all of a sudden start, like, sit up a little bit straighter and start paying a little bit more attention to what they're saying when you're around then?
No, you actually shock them and buy them a couple of rounds, and they're like, oh my God, priest bought me 2 rounds.
I'm going to Mass every Sunday forever.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. I was in Washington, D.C. years ago. This was actually part of the Latino Coalition on Substance Abuse. Well, we were against substance abuse, so I guess it was Latino Coalition against Substance Abuse. And we all went out, a bunch of us, and one of the guys was local, and he brought his friend. And these guys had a few beers, and they started swearing. And swearing does not bother me, I'm telling you. But the more beers, the worse they got. And I mean, on to things they would do with the Virgin Mary. And I mean, it was to the point where I thought, this is a little much. And the one guy that was from D.C. was very quiet. And then the food comes, and he asks his friend, well, Father Peter, do you mind saying grace? And these guys were just about to sink on their table, which they should. Lesson for our listeners, the person next to you at the bar may be a priest, so watch your mouth.
We'll be right back.
You know how sometimes you have an idea of how you want something done? Like how you would have your living room decorated, your closet organized, or whatever. But you just haven't had the time to get around to it because the way it is right now is passable and it works. But in the back of your head, you know it could be better someday. Well, for Spirit Lake the Game, someday is today. At Seven Generation Games, we've rolled out a major update of our very first game. We've kept the parts that were already great and enhanced those areas where we saw potential for enhancements to give you a new version of the game that we know kids will love even more than the original. If you already have Spirit Lake, check your email for the update notification. If you don't have Spirit Lake, well, what are you waiting for? Get it today.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games. I'm Anne Maria DeMars.
I'm the amazing Maria Burns Ortiz.
And I'm Father Michael Gutierrez.
And before we get started, we want to say thank you to Howard Siegel.
Are you sure that's their name?
Yeah, that's his name. For donating a game for a child. And we get asked a lot, who do these games go to? First priority is to kids in foster care. So if you are a foster parent, we love you. There's a special part of heaven just for you. And if you have a computer, you'd like to send us games for the kids to play, just email us info@sevengenerationgames.com. We would be happy to set you up. I used to be in foster care. It sucks. So if you're a good foster parent, I love you. And if you're a bad foster parent, I hope you die.
Well, speaking of heaven, since we have a priest with us, that seems like a good transition. But one of the other things, and one of the reasons why we really wanted to have you on, is you are really active in social justice.
Yeah, I have been. I have been for many years.
And one of the things we talk a lot about, and you know, even the Pope came out recently saying, you know, is there's this idea of whatever religion is, Christianity or Catholicism, whatever, which is part of Christianity, but, you know, whatever religious beliefs you have, this idea of talking the talk and then there's walking the walk. And I guess, where did your drive to be so actively involved when it came to these social justice issues come from?
Well, it came from a series of people. My high school teacher, where I was at St. Paul's in Santa Fe Springs, he was a big influence on me. He talked about it a lot, especially when we had the class in our senior year. So that caught my attention a lot. And then spending some time with a Catholic worker that following year when I was in first year in college really got my attention to how radical it is to think Catholic in social justice and really live it. So through the years, it kind of grew with me. And then when I got to the inner city as a new priest, started just a neighborhood things. And then when I came to Santa Monica, it went from like neighborhood things, the, you know, kids at high risk to, you know, the first knock I got on my door in 2000 from a parishioner who was working at UCLA who needed my support because they were getting ready to strike and he didn't know what to do. And this was all new to me because, you know, strike, what was all this? And this kind of became the telltale of learning about immigrant workers, not just workers, immigrant workers coming from other countries and not really getting paid well, and really began the whole idea of understanding the whole issue of immigration, workers, back to immigration, and to this day, still back and forth.
So what do you say to people who don't feel like the church should be getting involved in politics? Because I know you don't agree with that view.
Actually, when people say it's political, and I get it from not just people who are anti-immigrant, I even get it from immigrants themselves who are still trying to work out the understanding coming from their countries where it is a very clear thing. You don't talk about what's going on in the people's lives at church. It's just that's politics, and that's kind of a thinking that still goes on within immigrants themselves. It's a dichotomy that's really takes some time to educate, to explain to people, but it's doable.
So obviously, you have to love people because it's your job. And I have a hard time with people who claim to be Christian. Some of them even claim to be Catholic that are so anti-immigrant or even crazy. I'll give you an example. Recently, Maria and I talked about this in another podcast. Somebody I know who's very born-again Christian, super religious, if you ask them. And they made a comment about these protests. And they said, well, if they're in my way, I'm just going to run over them with my car. You know, I'll go slow so they have a chance to get out of the way, but I'm just going to run over with my car. And I thought, how can you think this way? Mm-hmm. How can you look at things that are going on when people are being sent back to a country they left when they were three and they have young children here? Well, we have young children that are being held in these centers and, you know, sleeping on the floor. I said, well, they shouldn't have left their country. How can you have so little of all that stuff in the Bible about, you know, feeding the hungry and comforting the sick, all that stuff? How do you deal with those people? Because you probably run into a lot and you have to put up with them. And you're not allowed to slap them, right?
No. I think one of the things people, when they talk like that, I mean, let's face it, the person who advises our own president presently is a Roman Catholic, Mr. Bannon.
What?
Yeah, he's Catholic.
Oh my God, I got to write the Pope.
Yeah, he's Catholic. And the thing is that they're schooled in a thought that is very different. I think it's financially driven. It's economic driven. The agenda is to push out the lowest, the poorest of the poor. I see this a lot in working with people, especially who are saying, no, I'm very Christian, but yet And I'm saying to them, you know, how far does your Christianity go? And they go, what do you mean? Well, if you look at the Hebrews, go back to the Jewish scriptures, it's welcome the stranger. With Jesus, it's the Beatitudes. What are you missing here in the stories? And they're like, well, but still they break the law, you know, and I hear this a lot. They break the law. And I go, do you understand that crossing the border illegally is the same as getting a speeding ticket?
So how do you educate those people?
I think what it is for people, and I've learned this through the years, is I've always asked them, have you ever met an undocumented family? And I think this is something Archbishop Gomez said yesterday, actually in the LA Times, is that, you know, I wish Mr. Trump would come and meet these families, get to know them first before we cast judgment on them and throw rocks. And I say that to people, when did you get to know them? And I've been using that, doing that recently at church. I've been reminding people, you know, these are the people who bring communion to your grandma who's sick. They're out here making breakfast on Sundays to raise money for the church. They're in the church chapel right now praying. Their kids are in catechism. They come to church every Sunday. I go, how can you judge somebody like that? They're doing good.
Yeah, one of the things is the way that you humanize people, I think. I read a story recently, and it was someone, I want to say, in North Carolina or something, and he was very, very anti, in particular, Syrian refugees, and then some of them moved into his building, and he's now become the go-to guy, and he helps them with their kids, and he helps them with all these things, because he says, you know, once I got to meet these people, once I had an understanding of who they were and what they were going through, it shifted my thinking. And, I mean, it seems sometimes it's just, like you said, you know, knowing people, when they go from being these abstract concept to actually the person sitting next to you in Mass.
Exactly, and I think it takes that time to really, for people to see that in people. You know, even, you know, our former President Bush, I think when he was trying to figure it out, when we were all trying to figure out in 2006 immigration reform the first time around, I think he saw it even as a humane situation, not as something, you know, you just mass deport. And I think he learned from the people who mentored him that that was not going to work in the long run. It had to be something smart. But of course, it didn't happen because there was a lot of struggle to even believe that they needed, there was the enforcement thinking back then. And now it's just gone to, that enforcement thing has gone to the 10th degree. And reality is, it doesn't help anybody, the enforcement part, at the end of the day. I mean, it's kind of the, you throw the little pebble in the ocean type of effect. It's not going to really do anything to better people's lives or better our economy.
I look at it, too, as a statistician, that this population is aging in this country. And all of those people that you want to kick out, all of those young kids you don't want to bother educating, those are the people that are going to pay your Social Security. Because Social Security is not the money you paid in, given out. It's the current workers paying for you. And if we end up like a lot of those countries now, you know, in Europe and Japan's getting this way, that have sort of a top-down pyramid. You know, normally the age is you've got a bunch of small, young people, and at the very top, you've got a very few old people, and that's why we can afford to take care of our elders. But now, if you kick out those people who are the younger ones, or if you treat them horribly, what's the odds that now, when you're 80 and you need somebody to care for you, who's going to be there?
Yeah. And I think we've seen already in certain parts of the economy, in agriculture, we're already seeing the effects of it. People not going to work, and talking about workers in the fields. Well, many of them are undocumented, and you're seeing it, and you'll probably start seeing it this spring or summer in your food prices.
You know, I have a question as far as bigger picture, because I think there's a lot of people that see things going on, but they don't have any idea where to start or what to do, or I can't change anything because I'm just me. But obviously you work in social justice. So what do you do? How do you get those people involved? What can people do?
I think right now, since, you know, immigration is the hot topic in this country, and today we just got the revised travel ban from President Trump, I think one of the things people can do is really begin to check on their neighbors. We've been doing things at church like know your rights, know what you do. What do you do when somebody knocks on your door at 5 a.m.? Have they identified themselves as police, which has been a tactic of ICE to identify yourself as police, because they are police, federal police, is to call your local police department and find out if they sent somebody, because most police departments are not going to do that. Just about all of them that are, especially in areas where there's a high Latino population. Check and see. If it's not your local police department, don't say anything else. Just let them knock. What I think I learned from a chief of police is that they will leave. So you don't have to say anything. Just be calm. Secondly, let your neighbors know. Be very close relationship with your neighbors. Let your neighbors know that your kids may need a place right away. Because of what happens if somebody's taken away and there's no parent, they will be put into foster care. So make sure you have somebody who can take your children right away and be sent there to be safe and be their guardian. That's one thing actually we're working on too right now, is to get people to maybe take on the ability to become guardians, and instead of sending the children to foster care. So we're working on that angle recently. And meanwhile, we're also going to be trying to create safe houses for families who really feel scared, and they know they just went to the NACTRU, and we're looking for houses for them, the kind of sanctuary for short time or long term.
And that's a pretty scary thing to think about, you know, in this country, that we're going back to the time when we're having to hide our neighbors from the authorities.
Yeah.
And how do you not get really angry about it? Or I guess maybe you do get upset, but how do you, you know, how do you deal with that? Because it'd be hard not to just sometimes go like, oh, I hate all these people, you know, and obviously as a priest, that's not what you do.
I think what I've learned is to teach people, this is when you pray actually harder. Because you have to pray for the ones who are causing these headaches, or causing this hurt, causing the pain for families, and that they wake up. And how that happens is, I don't know, I don't have an answer to that, but I know the God I believe, at least in my tradition, is one who can make change. So prayer is very much a big part of this.
Well, and I think also doing things. Was it St. Loyola Ignatius, the one that said that Catholics should go out and do good in the world and not stay hanging around monasteries?
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly how he phrased it, too.
No, I remember reading that about him saying, go forth and do good in the world. And I think that's a really good message, that people who claim to be good Catholics, that I was brought up, that the things that you can do are important, that you, if you have enough money to, you know, donate a few bucks to feed the refugees, if you're in Congress and you can vote against things that are hateful to people, or whatever you can do, that you should do that.
Yeah, you should. You should do things like that.
We'll be right back.
Did you know that 92% of U.S. homes have a computer? Yes. Yes, they do. And 43% of homes have a child under 18. Why aren't more kids playing educational games on those computers? Because they suck. The educational games, not the kids. Until now, download Spirit Lake or Fish Lake. Check out Forgotten Trail or Making Camp with no download required. All of our games are under $10, teach math and social studies. Let your child play on a real computer and learn real-life math. If you're on Steam, be the coolest aunt, uncle, big brother, or sister on the block and download Fish Lake. The little rugrat can play on your computer, learn fractions, and you can get some peace while you talk on the phone to Vin.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars, and we still have our amazing guest,
Father Mike Gutierrez.
So this is the part of the podcast where we ask you to give a tip, give advice to our listeners. And as a priest, I'm sure you're often asked for advice. Same. So what advice would you have? The world is open. Any advice you think that people should hear?
You know, I've been thinking about this. Big thing right now is we need people just to be nice to each other. You know, people are just like always upset and or putting down people or judging people. Whatever happened to just being nice?
I feel like that's directed at someone in this room that isn't me.
Nice is overrated.
He's a priest. He speaks for God. So I'm going to go with his advice.
Okay, I guess we will cut it there then.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, sevengenerationgames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at sevengenerationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.